Subscribe to The Spectator today and make your prediction for the 2024 US election winner. If you choose correctly, you'll receive a £30 Amazon gift card and the chance to win a case of Paul Roger champagne. Go to spectator.co.uk/decide24.
Hello and welcome to The Americano Show. I'm Kate Andrews and I'm guest hosting for Freddie Gray while he's over in the States. We'll be getting reports from him this week on the U.S. election and be speaking to many other guests. Now on with the show. I'm joined this afternoon by Spectator columnist Lionel Shriver as we continue to take you through election analysis. Lionel, thanks for joining Spectator TV. Donald Trump is president-elect. He has won the Electoral College comfortably. At the time of recording, not every swing state has been called, but it looks like he may win all seven swing states in this election. He is winning the popular vote by about 5 million votes. It doesn't look like that's going to flip. He's won the Senate, and there's a good chance we'll find out in a couple of days he's won the House too. Even if he hasn't, this is a landslide victory. How are you feeling about it? And how do you think America's feeling about it?
Well, of course, there is no one America, as you know. So something less than half of the country is feeling sorry for itself. I don't think I'm one of them. I've been public about the fact that I could not choose which of these candidates I despised more.
Right. Lists were
though
long.
Though I think... I pushed myself to be honest with self, and so I will be honest with the viewership. I think the truth is, and I verified this when I got the results, that emotionally I wanted Trump to win. But intellectually, I thought that Harris was probably safer for the country. It would be a dumpy and annoying administration, and it would pass all kinds of things that I didn't want them to, but it wouldn't be that unpredictable. It wouldn't go off the rails. You know, it was ironically the conservative option. But, you know, when I learned that Trump had won, I felt quietly happy with a little undercurrent of anxiety.
Yeah, that may be staying with you for some time, because I guess the big question around your emotional but also, I suppose, rational or intellectual reaction to this win and to this loss is, what does Donald Trump do now? And this has always been the concern, isn't it? Especially for those who are not believers, who are skeptical of his behavior. He could decide to drop the more aggressive promises he's made, especially around going after political opponents once he's in charge of the state. He could drop that. He could actually lean into that message of unity that we did hear in the early hours of the morning talking about uniting America. Or he could double down on it. And as you say, Trump is less predictable, even if the predictable option is really not very enjoyable at all. As you say, you would have known what you were getting.
Well, I think that the Democrats characterizing Trump as, you know, planning to imprison his opponents and to sic the military on anyone who doesn't agree with him, I think that was twisting what he has said. You don't need to twist what Donald Trump says. It's extravagant enough already without you're taking the next step. And they consistently did that with everything he said. So I'm not worried that he's going to throw his opponents in jail in the same way that his opponents tried to throw him in jail. I always thought that that was an ironic accusation. It's a kettle black situation. I think there are a couple of things he may do soon that I don't mind. I mean, if he gets control of the southern border and finishes the border wall, which I figure can't do any harm, and ideally puts together some legislation that makes enforcement more powerful, I'm all for it, and so is most of the United States. And I don't know, he also doesn't want men competing in women's sports. I think that's great too. And he leaned in heavily on that issue in his advertising towards the end of the campaign. So, you know, that may be a top of mind for now. And it's there's some question as to how much power the president would have in order to enforce that rule. But at least he could stop the use of Title IX to force biologically male people into sports in public schools and in women's sports.
In the lead up to Election Day, this election, the entire campaign was framed as a referendum on Donald Trump. And if it really was, then the answer is very clear. Not only has he won, he has a mandate to do the things that he has been discussing. I do wonder, though, looking at some of these results, breaking down the exit polls as we have done in the Spectator's Data Hub, our team, John, Sam, and Michael, have done some fantastic graphs that really help explain what's happened here. You see that it might have been a referendum on the current administration and on Biden and Harris, in truth, because voters decided to vote on how they felt about the economy. Maybe this is easy to say in retrospect. Maybe that's how it was always going to be. But even for Harris supporters, I find this fascinating, even for Harris supporters, abortion was just simply not the biggest issue. It made up for 22% of Harris voters, it was the biggest issue. And for 59% of them, it was democracy. Maybe, again, that's not surprising, but the narrative we were told in the lead up to this election about how it was all about Trump, about how it was all about very specific policy topics, seems to have completely broken down in the data that we're looking at now post-result.
I agree. And I think this is the most cheerful gloss to put on this result, which is that it is a summary rejection of progressive identity politics. And I am really hoping that this decisive result puts an end to the momentum behind progressive politics and that DEI, racially obsessed ideology. I'm also hopeful that because this race has been followed so avidly internationally, that it also sends a signal to especially the Anglophone countries that this whole identity politics thing, it is yesterday's news. It is over. It is not popular. It has been led by a very narrow band of people who have got control of a lot of big institutions, not just in the United States, but also in the likes of Britain. And it has been rejected. That includes racial preferences in hiring and admission to educational institutions. I would love to see the whole ball of wax thrown out, and that to me is the most cheerful aspect of this election. And the other thing is it's also a rejection of the fake, empty, insulting politics represented by Kamala Harris's, not just her campaign, but for her, but her candidacy. And you know, I found that her being run as a credible president of the United States insulted the electorate. Now, I completely accept that there are lots and lots of people who also look at Donald Trump that way. Okay, I understand that. And I kind of do too, but he is more credible than she is. She is a nothing. I mean, she did not, the only issue she spoke with any persuasive passion about was abortion. I truly believe that she does want abortion to be legal up until fetal viability. And this is a real thing that she believes. I'm not persuaded that she believes anything else other than that it would be fun to be president.
Oh, that's interesting. So I take a slightly different view. I also was deeply frustrated by how she decided to campaign. It was a very clear election tactic that they simply weren't going to say anything detailed about public policy in the run-up.
Say anything.
Anything.
Just say anything.
Sometimes the rambling resulted in truly nothing being said. But I think my frustration came from the fact that I think she does believe in quite a lot of things. And I think she was nervous to say so because of how those messages really would have landed in states like Pennsylvania. I mean, she really underperformed in Pennsylvania. There's a remarkable clip from CNN going viral right now as they were breaking down the data on election night. It's asked that the counties where Harris outperformed Biden are brought up on the map. And the map goes blank because there isn't a county in Pennsylvania where Harris performed better than Biden, at least at time of recording. You can't imagine there's been a huge shift there. Donald Trump has won the state by about 200,000 votes. Had she actually started talking about the views that she held on fracking back in 2019, those results might have been a lot worse, given the fact that she said consistently that she wanted to ban it. If you go back in her record on to California when she was attorney general, and we look at her record on criminal justice, and then if you go to her record in D.C. as a senator, a fairly left-wing, more authoritarian candidate emerges. You get this combination of quite left-wing economic agenda combined with pretty hawkish rhetoric on foreign policy, combined with an attitude towards criminal justice that both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party have been rejecting for years now. It struck me that she probably does have a lot of views and probably is able to articulate them quite well when she wants to, and maybe knew deep down that they are the exact opposite to where the American people are right now. Maybe this was the best tactic to do as well as she could have done, and we're seeing the result of it.
Sorry to interrupt the show, but if you enjoy what we do here at Spectator TV, then why not subscribe to the magazine as well? If you subscribe today, you get 12 weeks for just £12, plus a free £20 John Lewis and Waitrose gift card. You can sign up at spectator.co.uk/TV offer.
Aside from the abortion issue, and she, even on abortion, she has a very narrow vocabulary, right? And she just repeats the same phrases over and over and over again. Women having control of their own bodies, et cetera, et cetera. I've never heard her articulate a position on any other issue or in a very coherent, impressive way that has content, right? So I think you're giving her the benefit of the doubt. I think that she is an opportunist, that you can see when you ask her a question that what is actually going through her head is, what am I supposed to say? What is it advantageous for me to say? What trap do I need to avoid, rather than simply saying what she thinks? And that, because what she's thinking, it's all process. It's all, politics. It's not the stuff, the real decisions that you have to make in government, the real positions you need to take. And one of the things that I think is underobserved is that kind of emptiness, that flimsiness, that refusal to be pinned down, all of that whole package comes across as weak. It's weak. And you will have had any number of voters tell pollsters that they voted on the basis of the economy. Yes, it sounds like a reasonable decision. This is the way American voters are supposed to think about their pocketbook. But I think that it's more likely than not that an awful lot of people who say that were really persuaded by a more amorphous package of qualities in each of these candidates that in Trump makes them feel, however weird he is, that he's at least a powerful and strong figure. And whereas with Harris, you're looking at somebody who is flimsy and a kind of a hardly there, you know, it is a placeholder for people you don't even know. She doesn't seem like a president. And I don't think this has anything to do with race. I don't even think it has to do with sex. She isn't impressive. She doesn't present a feeling of a whole, strong person who is complete in her core. She seems like somebody who could easily be controlled. She seems like somebody who doesn't know what she's doing, doesn't know what she's saying, and doesn't, in her deepest self, completely believe that she deserves to be in the position that she is in. I don't think she should ever have come so far in her career as to be running for president of the United States, and her candidacy was freakish. But that, and one of the reasons that I am very pleased to see her rejected is that is the way she became a credible candidate for the presidency, which she should, but she should never have been. I mean, she was only made a vice president on the basis of race and sex. She is a DEI candidate. And that's what she would have represented, is that way of thinking had she become president. But she, it was only because Biden wanted, you know, he said he wanted to appoint a woman, and he was obviously committed to later to a Black woman. This is not why we should choose our leaders. It's twisted and demented and self-destructive. Those are not qualities. That's not intelligence. That's not wisdom. That's not experience, education, contacts, good instincts. All the things you need in a leader have nothing to do with race or sex. And therefore, had she won, you know, that would have been the dominance of this DEI ideology. That would have been the ultimate. It wouldn't have just been breaking the glass ceiling for women. It would have been the triumph of progressive identity politics.
I understand why you say the election feels like it is a rejection of that kind of identity politics, not least because Harris underperformed compared to Joe Biden with women, particularly with Black male voters. Trump got about 24% of their vote, still overwhelmingly for Harris, but an uptick there for Donald Trump. And the really big story was Latino voters who came out in much bigger numbers for Donald Trump than anybody anticipated. He actually won the majority of Latino male voters at 54%. These are huge leaps from where he was in 2020 and 2016. And yet, because he's won the popular vote, because he's won the Electoral College, we've already seen it today, Democrats at the moment don't have much to say yet. They haven't done the analysis. They haven't done the deep thinking about why this all went wrong. A lot of people are very quickly jumping on that identity politics train. Despite the data that's come out, they're saying that the election went wrong for Harris because America could not vote for a Black woman. That seems to be the narrative. So have we really overcome the identity politics narrative? It strikes me that it could be a while that the Democratic Party doubles down on that narrative, especially if they're feeling lost.
Of course the Democrats want to paint it that way. That is, you know, I don't find that persuasive at all. It's predictable because they see everything through their lens of race and sex. And that's the only way they know how to look at this result. They're missing a trick. I would like to see the Democrats do a little more soul searching. So far, they're not soul searching. They're just, you know, name calling. So if you looked at the Times the morning of of the election result. They haven't learned anything. It's more fascism. It's more authoritarianism. It's the start of very dark days in the United States, and it's very gloomy and threatening, and there's no sense that they are taking responsibility at all, right, for having offered something that the country does not want.
You make an important point here about broadening out the definition of identity politics as well, because it certainly strikes me that one of the many reasons that Donald Trump will have won this election is that many working class people across America felt like their own identity was under threat. The way that they choose to live their lives, the work they do, what they prioritize, was being described as neo-Nazi, being described as fascist sympathizing. It was being described as garbage towards the end of the election, and that did not resonate with them at all.
No, they never learn that, you know, contempt is bad politics, you know, and you can't, and also that you can't lecture people into being on your side. It's off-putting. And you know, the Obamas did that, made the same mistake, going out and finger pointing and accusing black men of being sexist, and you know, that this hectoring thing, it doesn't work. And it's, you know, you need to bring people on side, and that's generous. That's, to use one of their favorite words, that's inclusive, right?
Harris is going to be coming out to give presumably her concession speech at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. She is quite late in coming out to do this. A lot of people are saying it should have been last night. I'm not convinced that Donald Trump supporters have much of a leg to stand on when it comes to saying that Harris should have been out immediately conceding, given what happened in 2020. They're perhaps not the right people to be making that argument so boldly. But I think, you know, Lionel, you're someone who would very much like to return to the status quo of acknowledging the simple rules of an election and engaging with them. Perhaps you think she should have come out earlier, but when she comes out, what would you like to hear her say? And do you think there's anything she could say that might help the Democratic Party more quickly? We have no idea what she will say, but perhaps there are some things she could say that might help awaken her own base and help them move on.
You know, I think the only thing that the losing candidate needs to do in this circumstance is wish the winner well. And that's the most important thing to do for the country, even though I'm sure Kamala Harris has no warm feelings for Donald Trump, and neither do most Democrats who voted for her. But I have that feeling also. I mean, I have misgivings, enormous misgivings, about another Trump term. It's unsettling, but I wish him well. I don't want any of the Democrats' threats to come true. I want them to be proved worry warts and hysterics, you know, and because they have been hysterical, and I don't think that's proved a very good campaign strategy. I think it's backfired. I think all the hyperbole and huffing and puffing and blowing your house down, I just think it's blown up in their face. It's more, you know, treating your electorate with contempt, because they'll only understand it if you put it in terms of World War II.
Here's a question for you, Lionel. It is not confirmed that Donald Trump is going to win the House, that the Republican Party will control all of Congress. If he does, he'll find it much easier to deliver his mandate and some of the promises that he's made, particularly the promise to bring Elon Musk into government to tear it up and to potentially abolish major parts of the state. But it gives him a lot of power. If the Democrats were to win the House, then you would have more of a balance of power. You'd have a check on Donald Trump, a real check on his power. Which do you hope happens?
I'm a little torn on that. I guess it depends on which policy we're talking about.
You have to take them all. You have to take them all.
I mean, it's kind of exciting, the idea of a government able to do something, right? And therefore, and I said it depends on the policy. The policy, for example, of trying to shrink government just a tiny bit, just a little, instead of infinitely expanding it, I think that's exhilarating. I think the idea of eliminating whole departments is brilliant. And I love the idea of trying to pull back and comb through the morass of regulations that the federal government levies on everybody. It's a huge job. I'd be surprised if they got very far with it, but I would love to see someone to try. Now, as a rule, generally, because I'm leery of government, and therefore its inefficacy is a protection for the rest of us, I usually like at least, you know, a divided Congress, because it puts a check on dumb ideas. So I'm quite torn on that one. And I can see why even a lot of Trump voters would appreciate the House going to the Democrats.
Just to keep government in check. Well, we'll find out in the next couple of days. And let's hope soon, because, you know, some states have proven that it really is possible to count ballots overnight. And it is incredibly frustrating to not have the full set of results, even now as we speak. But it does mean that we'll need you back soon, Lionel, because there'll be so much more.
I can hardly wait. And listen, I think we have to say it is a huge relief that this is a decisive result. Everything that we were worried about with the counting and we were going to have lawsuits for years and we wouldn't have a result until January if then, and then everyone would be out on the streets and shooting each other.
Yeah.
We're not doing that. And that is fantastic. I mean, even if you don't want Trump to be president, you have to admit that it's good that we know who is going to be president. And I don't think we're going to see anybody trying to manhandle that result the other way around. That's just hugely great news for everybody.
America needed clarity, indeed.
Yes.
And when Kamala Harris comes out and presumably concedes, that will also be a very positive moment, something the country needs to see. And a reminder that the Democratic Party has not faltered on that yet. So it's a low bar that we have to give credit for that, but I will give some credit for that. Lionel, thank you so much for joining Spectator TV. We'll see you soon.
I hope so.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Americano. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe and send it on to your friends.